This is not our usual questions and answers time, and I'm not going to deal with questions and answers either, so I guess that's fair. But in the course of writing out some questions for questions and answers, someone made a couple of suggestions about topics which might be suitable to present, and this is one of those. It was a suggestion to speak about being joyful instead of complaining. This is probably not the best week to deal with that. Or maybe it is. I know we've all had a few complaints, and I still have one or two, but nevertheless, maybe this is a good time to delve into this subject. A family sat around the breakfast table one morning, and as their custom was, the father returned thanks for the food, asking God's blessing. Immediately afterward, however, as he often did, he began to grumble about hard times and the poor quality of the food that he was forced to eat, the way it was cooked, and much more. His little daughter interrupted him, saying, "Father, do you suppose that God heard you when you prayed a little while ago?" And he said, "Certainly," with a confident air of an instructor. And then she said, "And did he hear what you just now said about the bacon and the coffee?" "Of course," the father replied. The little girl then asked him, "Well then, Father, which did God believe?" Ouch! That's something that we all might need to give some attention to, between being thankful and being complaining. The little girl made a very sharp point, and it's one that all of us might do well to give some consideration to. Do we do the same thing that father did? What does God believe about our worship and faith? Do we pray and give thanks that we are blessed to be here? Which does God believe when we complain that the song leader was too high, too low, too fast, too slow, sang a song that nobody knows, or one that we sing all the time? You know, it's kind of tough to be a song leader, isn't it? Or that the preacher seemed to take way too long and didn't tell me anything I already know, or else he said a bunch of stuff I never heard of. Well, that's problematic also. What do we really feel more strongly about? That we have a time and an opportunity to come together to worship God, or to complain about how we wish things were done our way? Have we counted our blessings? Do we realize how privileged we really are, and that there are many people who do not know the gospel? Do we realize that many congregations do not even have a song leader per se? Many do not have preaching, a preacher at least, or teachers, or even elders, and many do not even have children in their midst. So we are truly blessed, and we need to concentrate on the blessings that we have rather than the things we may not think are as good as they should be. And that's not to say we shouldn't try to improve either, but nevertheless, we should be satisfied with what we have as we work toward improvement. Complaining about spiritual things is really nothing new, or complaining about spiritual leaders is really nothing new. Moses was chosen by God to lead the Israelites, and yet it seems that he could never satisfy the people of God no matter what he did. They complained about a great many things. Let's take a look at some of these. Let's go to Numbers chapter 11, beginning with verse 1. Numbers chapter 11, beginning with the first verse. Now, when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it, and his anger was aroused to the fire of, so the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of them in the outskirts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses, and when Moses prayed to the Lord, the fire was quenched. So he called the name of the place Taberah, because the fire of the Lord had burned among them. God gives a rather vivid display of his view towards the complaints that he was hearing. And, you know, here I didn't see anything specifically mentioned. This seems to be a general complaining attitude that the people had. And it might have even been directed toward Moses, but who was in charge of the nation of Israel? God was. So he took it personally. And you might think, well, this stopped it. You know, after this happened, surely nobody would complain again, right? Not exactly. Let's keep reading with verse 4. Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving, so the children of Israel also wept and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish that we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes." Isn't this rather an insult to God? Yes, we had all of those luxurious things, those great things to eat in Egypt. Wait a minute, wasn't that the place we were enslaved? Seems like people have restricted memories when it comes to the good old days sometimes, don't they? We had all of that in Egypt. We don't have it now. And then to further compound the insult, they say, all we have is this manna. Well, if you didn't have that, what would you have? We should be grateful that God sent the manna every day, except the Sabbath. But no, they are critical of God's failure to provide them with what they think they should be provided with. Now let's go to Numbers chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Ethiopian woman whom he had married. For he had married an Ethiopian woman, and they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoke only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. They even complained about his wife. This is simply having an attitude that seems to complain about everything. It's not that they did not have some legitimate concerns with the food and so forth, but it's not just that. It seems to be about everything. And then let's next go to Numbers chapter 14, verses 1 through 4. Because Moses had sent out 12 spies, and 10 of them brought back a bad report of the land, and they did not want to go up and conquer Canaan anymore. So all, beginning with verse 1, so all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night, and all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt." I don't know. I honestly think I'd be too afraid to say that. Talk about a lack of gratitude. Or if we had only died in this wilderness, well, God's not going to send them back to Egypt to die, but he's going to grant this second request. They are going to die in the wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to the land to fall by the sword? Doesn't that presume they're not going to win? Doesn't that presume they're not going to conquer Canaan? And isn't that built on, we don't think God can do it for us? We don't think God has the ability? Now, I seem to remember something about 10 plagues in Egypt, don't you? And how God took them out with a mighty hand. They never had to endure a single battle. And he delivered them from the Egyptians. And yet now all of a sudden, God is powerless. But that's the way they're talking. See, why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not have been better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us go select a leader and return to Egypt. Now, a little bit later on, Joshua and Caleb, who are the only ones besides Moses and Aaron that appeared to be thinking rationally during this time period, say in verse 8, if the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? Reject me. Let's make no mistake. They are rejecting God. And so they complained about conquering the land which God had appointed to them. Well, no, that's not the last complaint either. That's not much sooner done with than in Numbers chapter 16 and verse 3, we see Moses accused of exalting himself. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why do you exalt yourselves above the congregation of the Lord? You know, that's unfortunately sometimes the way it is. Even in the Lord's church today, somebody volunteers to do something and somebody else is jealous or bent out of shape and says, who do they think they are? Well, they're a person who volunteered. Why didn't you volunteer? So the people again have to undergo several of them being put to death for these sayings. And then let's look at Numbers chapter 21, verses 5 and 6. Numbers 21, verses 5 and 6. And the people spoke against God and against Moses, why have you brought us up out of the land of Egypt to die in this wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread. Speaking again of the manna. So the Lord sent serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people died. Now God did provide a solution with the bronze serpent that was raised up, and whoever looked upon it was safe. But here are six examples, time after time, Israel complaining about the way God is handling things. Now, what's sad is that these are God's people, but they're grumbling and complaining. Had they forgotten where they had come from? Well, no, they kept saying they wanted to go back there. Had they forgotten what God had done for them? Seems so. Had they forgotten their deliverance by God? What God was doing for them, even on a daily basis? Did they really have faith in God? Now let's go to the New Testament, to the passage that was read for us a few moments ago. Philippians chapter 2, verses 12 through 16. Since Christ has been highly exalted, and that's where verses 9 through 11 leaves off in Philippians chapter 2. Since Christ has been highly exalted, Christians should want to work out their own salvation with fear and trembling. We know that God reigns, and we know that we are His children. We are saved by God through the blood of Christ, but there is work that we are required to do, and His will is accomplished through us. Working out our salvation with fear and trembling tells us that we cannot have a blasé, careless attitude toward being a Christian. We must be putting forth effort to discern the will of God and what we need to do, and then to accomplish that. And we need to accomplish it without murmuring and disputing and arguing. The Greek word translated murmuring here is gongusmos. Doesn't this sound like a really depressing word? It's one of those onomatopoetic words where the thought seems to fit the sound of the word. Murmurers are gongusmos. It also means muttering or displeasure or complaining. And so that's the word that describes this kind of attitude that Paul says in Philippians 2 to avoid. Do all things without murmuring and complaining. Sometimes people just get caught up into the idea of criticism. In fact, an anonymous person wrote this poem. It is easy enough to pick out the flaws in the work that others have done, to sneer at the little they have achieved when your own task you haven't begun. It's easy enough to fuss and find fault when others are doing their best, to point out the errors that others have made when you have done nothing but rest. It is easy enough to cavil and carp, to criticize, scoff, and deride, for few of us have ever done perfect work, no matter how hard we have tried. It is easy enough to think of the best, not to think of the best, and to dwell all the time on the worst, and perhaps it is proper sometimes to find fault, but be sure you've done something first. Some wisdom in those anonymous lines. The question is to ask ourselves, do we believe in God's providence? We ought to. The Bible teaches God's providence. If that is so, then when we complain, are we not really complaining against Him? As Israel did in the wilderness? That's something we might give some thought to. Who are we actually complaining against when we offer up complaints? Much of the New Testament writing is encouragement to do what is right. But there is also realism. As you read in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 32 about the degeneration of the Gentiles and how that when they had left God, they became practicing homosexuals. And there are, in verses 29 through 32, a whole bunch of other traits that are described. Well, I don't know that that's a complaint so much as an analysis of what is wrong, a realistic look at what happened. One might construe some of the things that Paul wrote against false teachers as a complaint, and surely they could be looked at that way. But basically, they are intended as warnings. The closest thing that I can recall to a complaint is what Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 14 when he makes this statement. Alexander the coppersmith did me much harm. May the Lord repay him according to his works. That sounds a little bit like a complaint against this fellow and asking God to do something in that regard. But most of the time, it is simply setting forth those things that are wrong, those things that are errors, and how they can be corrected. Everyone recalls a few verses earlier than that in chapter 3 of 2 Timothy, verses 16 and 17, where Paul again writes, all scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine. We can teach it for reproof. We can show people what's wrong. We can reprove them with what's wrong that they're doing. That's not necessarily a complaint. That is showing someone what they need to know. And for correction, it's not enough to know what's wrong. You have to also know what's right. You have to know what you ought to be doing. And instruction in righteousness. So all that we have is for our benefit in the New Testament. Now, there are some times in the Old Testament where God himself complains about his people. And the complaint is justified. That's one thing where sometimes we differ from God. His complaints are always justified. Ours, well, maybe, maybe not. But God's always were. He complained against his nation and their behavior, and he was exactly right. And he punished them because he is just. And he will not allow people to ignore him and rebel against him. He will not allow that. You know, some people are teaching today that everything is grace and God will overlook and forgive everything. No, he won't. You don't see him doing that in the Old Testament, and he's not going to do that in the New Testament era either. All are going to be called to account. And everybody's works are going to be examined. God's not going to look at those who rebel against him and behave immorally and teach false doctrine and say, oh, well, that's okay. Let's just let bygones be bygones. No, it's not going to work that way. They shall be judged. We shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ, 2 Corinthians 5:10, and that we may receive the things done in our bodies, whether it be good or evil, according to what we have done. There are not people who are going to be let off the hook because God's in a good mood that day. He is holy and he is just. So it's up to us to follow his teachings in every respect. But Paul does not just run around issuing complaints. He did make this statement about Alexander. But he doesn't say anything against Caesar, even the Caesar who put him to death. He doesn't complain about him. Ah, you know what he's like. No, nothing like that. He knew that everything was in God's hands and that he had fought a good fight. He had finished his course. He had kept the faith, 2 Timothy 4:6-8, and he knew that there would be laid up for him a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give him at that day, and to all them also that love his appearing. Paul would die as a martyr of the faith without complaint of any kind. We all have the power to have a good attitude. God knows our trials. He knows the things that are wrong. He knows the times that we are abused. He knows all of that. We must continue to trust in Him in all of life's circumstances, and as best we can, without complaint. God will sort everything out on the day of judgment. And those who have wronged us, those who have done despicable things, God will take care of that, as we just noticed in 2 Corinthians 5:10. It's up to us to keep on honoring and praising God, who has granted to us salvation through Jesus Christ. This evening, if there's one who has never obeyed that gospel, we invite you to come. If you know what it is you need to do, if you know about faith, if you know about repentance, if you know that you need to confess His name before men, and you're ready to be baptized for the forgiveness of sins, we encourage you to come and begin your new spiritual life and walk in Jesus Christ. If you have already done that but have given way to things that you ought not, whether it be attitudes, morals, or zeal, or whatever it might be, we invite you to come also, if you need to, while we stand and while we sing.